and turned to face the outside world. A chill wind nipped at the holes in his jeans and coat. The coins felt heavy in his pocket. There were still a few hours until sunset, and he had plans for how to spend them. "Sorry, are you sure?" Daniel leaned over the bench of the pawn shop. He was trying to figure out if he'd misheard or if there was simply a mistake. The broker sat opposite, turning one of the coins over in his fingers. Bric-a-brac, second-hand jewelry, and antiques cluttered the surfaces around them and filled the glass case below Daniel's elbows. "It's a fair price. You won't get better anywhere else." The broker placed the coin flat on the table and pushed it back towards Daniel, a signal that he wanted a decision. Daniel swallowed. The broker's tone made it sound as though Daniel had complained about how little he'd offered for the coin. He couldn't have been farther from the truth. The price for one of the coins would cover a month of rent and food, with enough left over for a decent bottle of wine. Daniel's fingers had gone numb. He hoped his face didn't look as shell-shocked as he felt.
Sure, that's fine. Could I have a couple of envelopes, too?"
"Absolutely." The broker, a short man with smile lines around his mouth, pulled out his receipt book. "If you get any more of those coins, bring them to me first, okay? You'll have a hard time selling them elsewhere, being a collector's item and all. But I know people who will want them, and I can get you a good price." When Daniel left the store, he was still in shock. The money in his pocket was more than he'd ever owned at one time before. And the mysterious Bran had promised him more if he kept working at Craven Manor. Up until the moment the broker gave him the quote, Daniel had half expected the coins would be worthless. But they weren't. He was rich. By his standards, at least. He'd traded one of the coins, but kept the other safely in a zipped pocket in case of emergencies. The pawnbroker's store was across the street from Kyle's apartment, and Daniel waited until he was inside the lobby before taking out the money and dividing it into portions. $40 went back into his pocket. With Bran supplying food and shelter, he wouldn't need much cash, but he knew it would be smart to have some on hand. $200 went into a second envelope to help Kyle with the rent until he could find a new roommate. The rest was tucked into the second envelope, and Daniel held it close to his chest as he jogged up the stairs. The light flickered at the end of the hallway. It had grown worse in the 2 days Daniel had been away. The carpet seemed to grow barer, too. Daniel stopped outside Mrs. Kirshner's room. When he bent his ear to the wood, he could hear her cooing to her cat in German. He slipped the envelope under her door. Daniel followed the hall until he reached the lonely and discolored 16 hung from Kyle's door. He still had his key, but it seemed rude to use it. He didn't live there anymore, after all. Instead, he knocked. The door cracked open a moment later, and then Daniel was gasping as Kyle slapped his back.
"There you are! I was afraid you'd gone and died in a gutter somewhere!"
Kyle was wearing an old sweatshirt and had let his stubble grow to an unruly stage, but he looked happy. Daniel laughed and let himself be dragged inside. "Sorry, I should have left a note. I moved into the groundskeeper's cottage." Kyle squinted at him. "Remember? The job I told you about, tending to a house's garden?"
"You kidding me? I thought that was a joke."
Kyle shook his head as he looked Daniel up and down.
"So what's the deal? You moving back in? Flint's girlfriend took him back, so you can have your room again."
Daniel hesitated for only a second. "Actually, I'm going to stay there. It's a good job. It pays well. Here." He held out the envelope. $200 to cover the next few weeks of rent. "Do you think you can find someone else to share with before then?"
"Maybe."
Kyle pulled out the cash and thumbed through it, counting it, then tucked it into his back pocket. His grin stretched plump cheeks.
"Wow, look at you! Real job? Real money? You're finally growing up, huh? Come on, let me buy you a beer. It's the least I can do. I want you to tell me all about this job."
Chapter 9.
Kyle lounged beside Daniel at the bar's counter. It was a busy night, and a cloud of chatter surrounded them. A football match played on the TV suspended from the ceiling, and every few minutes whoops and cheers drowned out their words as the local team scored. The beer was going to Daniel's head. He couldn't remember how many he'd drunk, only that it was a lot, and both he and his cousin were slurring their words. Kyle had bought him a hearty meal and was paying for the drinks, and he seemed to be in good humor.
So, hang on. The place is really empty?
Kyle nursed a beer, sloshing the liquid inside its bottle.
You're all by your lonesome up there.
Just me, the cat, and the birds. Daniel tried to laugh, but it came out as a giggle. The lights were very bright.
And the guy who delivers food, but he only comes once a week.
That's bonkers, man. Kyle shook his head, like it was the funniest thing he'd ever heard.
Absolutely nuts. But he's paying you okay, isn't he?
Yeah. Check this out. Daniel retrieved the coin from his pocket and passed it to Kyle.
That's what my wage looks like. How weird is that?
Kyle's face scrunched up as he turned the coin over.
Is this gold? What is he, a pirate?
I know, right? Daniel put his bottle back onto the bench. A quiet voice in the back of his mind said he was being careless, but he was too giddy to pay it much attention.
As far as I can guess, they were minted back when the house was occupied. Late Georgian era, or maybe Regency era.
When's that?
Late 1700s or early 1800s.
Daniel bent forward to point to the seal on the coin.
That same emblem is on the tomb in the yard and worn by people in the house's paintings. It's probably the family crest.
Hey, I know that. The bartender had approached unseen to place two fresh beers at their sides. He was squinting at the coin.
My grandfather had one of those. No way!
Kyle's voice had risen in volume, and he seemed to be barely containing his laughter.
Did your grandpa get hired as a ground person, too?
The bartender's high coif and stringy beard reminded Daniel of a yak. He glanced down the bar, but all of the patrons were engaged in chatter and still had full drinks. The bartender leaned far over the thick wooden bench, his eyes narrowed, and spoke in a tone so soft that Daniel could barely understand him.
Nah. My great-grandfather's grandfather was a physician. He was employed by the Myricks family.
The name sparked the coal of curiosity in Daniel. He scooted closer.
Physician? Did he treat Annalise Myricks? Do you know why she died?
The bartender snickered at Daniel's eagerness.
I never met him. He died like an eternity ago. But my grandfather was a historian and collected his great-grandpa's journals and trinkets. My parents would take me to visit him as a kid, and he'd always talk forever, telling story after story about our forefathers. He was half senile, and everything he said sounded like a wheeze, but he loved talking about his physician great-grandfather and the crazy family on the hill. The mother was bonkers, apparently. Paranoid and obsessive-compulsive. He used to read passages from the physician's journal, and it was the kind of stuff that would give you nightmares. The barkeep scrunched his face up and squinted at an invisible book as he imitated his grandfather.
I would have loved to give her some electroshock treatment. Any other woman would have been put in an asylum for the ravings she spouted, but she was rich up to her eyeballs, and rich people were untouchable.
Daniel could picture the old patriarch clearly, with a worn, haggard face, spittle escaping his chapped lips as he recited memorized passages from the book. A fireplace would cast deep shadows in the crevices of his creased face, and his eyes, half blind with cataracts, would rove across the room.
She didn't want treatment herself, afraid I might curse her with my medicine. She wouldn't let anyone touch her. But she did let me treat her child, the poor mite.
Annalise? Daniel pressed. The barkeep broke his pantomime to shrug.
Like I said,
I haven't heard the stories since I was a kid, but that name sounds about right.
Do you know what was wrong with her?
Yeah. The barkeep rubbed a tattooed hand over his beard. That was Pawpaw's favorite part of the story. She had this condition that made her skin blister in the sun. He called her a moon child. Of course, these days they have a proper name for the disease, something complex beginning with an X. Point was, she couldn't be allowed near any kind of sunlight. She spent her days locked up in their mansion, thick curtains covering all of the windows, and was only allowed out at night.
Daniel blinked and saw the portrait in his mind's eye. She'd been impossibly pale, the kind of paleness that came from never seeing the sun.
How did she die?
No clue, bud. The barkeep shrugged. Pawpaw's journals said he tried things to help her, all kinds of crazy experimental treatments, but nothing worked. After a few years, the mother sent him away in a fit of fury and told him to never return.
Kyle squinted up at the bearded man. You seriously called him Pawpaw? What, did he die of embarrassment?
Shut up. I love my Pawpaw.
The barkeep glowered at Kyle, then flipped a cloth over his shoulder and marched to the other end of the bar.
Why do you have to say that? Daniel hissed.
Come on, he's a pretentious twit. Enjoy your beer.
Daniel picked up his bottle, but didn't drink any. His mind was swirling. He tried to imagine what it might feel like to be trapped inside during the day, closeted behind heavy blackout curtains, never allowed to see the sun or to feel its rays on his skin, for fear it would blister into agonizing scabs. Would prolonged exposure have killed Annalise? He didn't like to think about the girl's end. Daniel ran a hand over his face.
Hey, what? The douche didn't upset you, did he?
Kyle snickered and tapped Daniel's knee with his bottle.
You should tell his pawpaw to stop repeating those ghoulish stories.
It's not that, Daniel lied. I need to be heading back. I didn't mean to stay out this late.
All right, hang on a minute. I've got something to ask first. Do you think you could get me a job at your mansion? Put in a good word for your buddy?
Daniel's buzz was starting to fade, but dizziness persisted. He licked his lips. I would if I could, but I don't think he's looking for new employees. His instructions specifically said not to invite anyone else to the house.
Come on, help me out here. Haven't I been good to you? We're blood, you and I.
Kyle's eyes narrowed.
Or are you going to drop me now that you've got a cushy gig trimming grass?
We're not blood. Cousins by marriage. The dizziness was getting worse. Daniel rubbed at his forehead, trying to clear his mind.
And I don't trim grass. It's a lot of work. The place is a mess.
Kyle drained the last of his beer, then slammed the empty bottle onto the bench.
Look, man, I'll level with you. I need a new job. My boss is riding my ass constantly, and the pay is trash. I know you earned more than what you gave me tonight, and a job like that could set me up for life. All I'm saying is, I saved you from the streets. You owe me.
The lights were far, far too bright. Daniel stood, and the vertigo rushed through him like a wave.
I'll talk to him, write him a letter, but I can't promise anything, okay?
Kyle slapped his shoulder, his grin back in place.
Attaboy. You and me, we've got to stick together, don't we? Go and see what strings you can pull for your buddy.
The night air was chill, but Daniel appreciated the sting on his skin. It helped chase the fog out of his mind and give him purpose. He tucked his hands into his pockets as he and Kyle strode towards the apartment, Kyle chatting about the new game he'd bought.
Something's not right.
His fingers wiggled in the pockets, but they were empty. Daniel pulled up short.
Kyle, the coin's gone!
Huh?
Kyle squinted at him.
What you mean?
The coin! I gave it to you to look at! What happened to it?
I put it on the bar.
What, you didn't pick it up?
Daniel dashed back into the stocky brick building on the corner of the street. The bar was packed. He could only pray no one had taken the coin in the couple of minutes he'd been gone. The vertigo made him a serious liability as he wove through the crowd to reach the section of the bar he'd been sitting at. The seats where he and Kyle had been sitting were still empty, but the coin was nowhere to be seen. Daniel scanned the wooden slab and the nearby ground, feeling helpless frustration rise in his chest, then waved to the barkeeper. The bearded man shot him a sour glare, but grudgingly approached. "Did you see my coin?" Daniel fanned his fingers over the bar to emphasize the empty space. "It was right here. Did you find it and take it to keep it safe?"
"Sorry, buddy." The barkeep shrugged, but his expression seemed genuinely regretful.
Daniel hovered there, the sting of loss and burn of humiliation warring for precedence. A hand clapped his shoulder, and he turned to meet Kyle's grim smile.
"Not here?"
"No. Gone."
"What a bummer,"
Kyle shrugged.
"I'd offer to buy you a drink, but I guess I already did."
"Don't joke, this is serious." Daniel scanned the crowd, looking for flashes of gold amongst the glinting bottles and glasses the patrons held. His heart sank in tandem with his shoulders. Whoever had taken it must have pocketed it. Kyle slung an arm across Daniel's shoulders. Together, they walked back outside into the night. Daniel exhaled and watched the plume of condensation evaporate.
"What time is it?"
"Just on 11, buddy. Wanna go somewhere for round two?"
"Can't."
Daniel extracted himself from the embrace.
"I've gotta get back. Curfew."
As he jogged down the street to collect his bike, he heard Kyle call after him.
"Don't forget to ask about that job!"
"I shouldn't have made that promise." Daniel scowled to himself as he tugged the bike along the bendy, unstable flagstones of the road to Craven Manor. Bran might actually hire him. Best case scenario, Kyle's behavior will taint me by association. Worst case, I might actually lose my job. Kyle wasn't a hard worker. He did enough to cover himself when his boss was around, but Daniel had seen how his cousin behaved when he wasn't being watched. His 40-minute lunch break would stretch into 2 or 3 hours of sipping beer in the shade and cracking jokes with his friends. At the manor, with zero accountability, Daniel doubted Kyle would do anything.
"You should have known better, idiot. He saw what you earned. That was why he took you out for the beers. He never does anything like that without expecting a favor in return."
The bike caught on a root, and Daniel had to kneel to untangle it. When he straightened, he'd lost track of which direction he'd been traveling. The mossy ground beneath the roots and shrubs was void of flagstones. He twisted, searching behind himself, and felt a ping of dread. He was already cutting his curfew close. What happened if he wasn't inside his cottage before midnight? "You can't have strayed far from the path." He paced back the way he thought he'd come, head and shoulders bent as he scanned the ground for hints of gray. The trees all looked alien in the moonlight. Animals chattered nearby but fell silent when he drew too close. The fear sharpened, and Daniel increased his pace, moving as quickly as the bike would let him. The dozy pall the alcohol had cast over him had thoroughly faded, but the clarity only increased his anxiety. Then his shoe hit something firm. Daniel scraped the dirt away and sucked in a breath as he saw stone. He hunted around it, digging through the leaf litter and the loam, until he discovered another, then a third. They gave him a direction. He followed it, and soon the path resolved itself. His relief was immense, but he knew he'd lost a lot of time. "It was 11 when I left the pub. It takes just under an hour to reach Craven Manor. But I was dawdling, stuck in my thoughts. What if it's already after midnight? Does Bran have any way of knowing I got home late? I need to buy a watch with my next payment." The rusted gates were visible through the trees. Daniel broke into a jog, then smothered a curse as his bike stuck in another shrub. He shook it free and sprinted the last few feet. The moon washed its blue light across the gardens and the manor's roof. It looked deceptively peaceful. Daniel left his bike beside the gate and squeezed through the gap. There were no clanging bells or sirens at his intrusion, but he still felt guilty as he slunk through the trees. Dead branches grazed his arms and neck as he wove past them. They reminded Daniel of brittle fingers scrabbling at his skin. His heart flipped unpleasantly. A wail echoed through the garden. Daniel looked up at the crow perched above him. He recognized it as the old, oversized bird that normally lurked by the house's front. He'd disturbed it, and it ruffled its feathers as though affronted. "Sorry," Daniel whispered. Its beady eye followed him as he passed its tree. Then it shook its feathers out and launched into the air. Its wing beats were slower than its companions, but harsher, as though fighting against the air. Daniel watched it until it disappeared over Craven Manor's rooftop. "Hurry, get inside, lock the door. It might not be too late." He staggered into the ring of statues. The half-nude ladies and centaurs seemed less carefree than before. Although their poses were relaxed, arms thrown overhead, feet dancing, their gazes were accusatory, and the stains running through their garments seemed harsher. Daniel hated the way their eyes followed him. He slipped past them, towards where he knew his cottage was hidden. He caught a flicker of motion in the corner of his eyes. He could have sworn he'd seen something moving through the trees. "Don't linger. Get to your house." An awful sense of dread descended over him. The hairs rose across the backs of his arms. His mouth felt horribly dry. His palms sweaty, he flexed the fingers as he broke into a run. "Someone's following me." Paranoia hit him like a sledgehammer. He couldn't stop turning his head, hunting for movement among the dead branches and strangling vines, convinced he had company, but unable to see it. His cottage was just ahead. Moonlight glittered on the windows like a beacon. And yet the thing behind him was gaining. He couldn't hear it or see it, but he could feel it. And it grew closer with every step, fixated and inexorable. He hit the cabin's wall hard enough to force the breath out of him. The door's handle was jammed. He twisted it, panicking that he'd been locked out of his home for missing the curfew, but then it screeched as it turned. His feet tripped over the entrance, and Daniel tumbled onto the wooden floor. He swiveled to close the door, and his heart missed a beat. A figure stood just outside the threshold, its glassy eyes locked onto him. Chapter 10. Daniel gaped. The world seemed to slow, unraveling, until he was trapped in that moment. He lay on his back, one hand stretched towards the door that was just out of reach, and the other pressed against the wooden floor. His sweaty fingers rubbed through the grit and dust. His brain, stunned into stupidity, latched on to the texture. His floor needed sweeping. That was real, mundane, easy to believe. Unlike the phantom outside his door. She was there and not, tangible and a delusion, all at the same time. He could see her. He could see through her. The black, gnarled trees at her back were as perfectly clear as she was. His lips parted, but he managed only a whisper. "Annalise." She'd lost her color. The blonde in her hair was gone, along with the flush across her cheeks and the pastels in her dress. It had all been converted into the phantom white. When she moved, the image rippled and threatened to vanish, like trying to hold on to a magic eye solution. Her curls drifted behind her as though she were suspended in water. Her eyes were missing both pupil and iris. She stepped forward. Her dress and hair seemed to float with the motion. One of her hands reached towards him. Fear broke through Daniel's shock. He lunged towards the door and forced it closed. The latch bounced, then caught with a reassuring click. Daniel forced a shaking breath down his throat as he leaned the side of his head against the wood to listen. The outside world was perfectly silent. No insects chirped. No birds shifted in the trees. If not for his own ragged breathing, Daniel might have thought he'd gone deaf. Then came a soft tip, tip, tip on the other side of the door. Daniel crept backwards, away from the door, and pressed a hand across his mouth to silence the noises that wanted to escape. Tip, tip, tip. The knocks were harder, more demanding. Daniel's eyes burned as he flicked them from the door to the window and back. He hadn't pulled the curtains. Patches of stars were visible between the canopy. The rules said the curtains had to be shut. Will something bad happen if they're not? Daniel crept towards the window and used the desk to pull himself to his feet. He gripped the thick cloth, but didn't pull it. The rational part of his mind was already scrambling to come up with an explanation for what he'd seen. His eyes had been playing tricks on him. She'd been a wisp of smoke, a tapping branch, a parting gift from the alcohol. But his heart wasn't as easily convinced. Daniel's cheek bumped the glass as he leaned against the window and squinted towards the front step. He could see patches of bare earth, the stone step before his front door, and the tangled branches surrounding his home. Nothing moved amongst them. The rational part of his mind started screaming louder, claiming victory over the phantoms. And yet the insects still weren't chirping. Daniel swallowed around the lump in his throat. He raised a hand, hesitated, then rapped a knuckle against the glass. He counted his heartbeats. His breath misted over the cold pain. Seconds passed, and he began to think he was alone. Then came tip-tip-tip right beside his head. He jolted back as Annalise materialized on the other side of the glass. Empty eyes stared into his. Her tapping fingers pressed to the window, leaving a smudge on the glass. The corners of her mouth twitched up into a hint of a smile. Daniel blinked, and the girl was gone. Daniel bit the inside of his cheek, willing himself not to be sick as he drew the curtains. He was clammy and shaking. The tapping didn't return for the rest of the night. Daniel kept his curtains closed and door locked, and after sitting up for a restless hour, he crawled into bed and tried to sleep. His nerves were too keyed up to let him fall into any kind of deep rest. Annalise might not have been tapping at his door, but Daniel was certain she was still outside his home, waiting. When he startled awake for what felt like the 100th time, Daniel gave up on sleep and rose to start the fire. The earliest hints of morning lit the gap under his front door. He sat on the fireside rug, his hands clasped around a mug of black tea, and watched the flames. Ghosts are real. It was still hard to wrap his head around the new knowledge. Daniel had seen supposed video evidence and read real-life accounts of paranormal activity, but in every one of those cases, it had been easy to dismiss them as a coincidence if they were too subtle, or a hoax if they were too clear. But after he'd glimpsed the spirit outside the window, even the rational part of his mind had abandoned its objections. He'd never seen a ghost before Annalise. Did that mean ghosts were incredibly uncommon? Was Annalise special in some way? Or was there something about Craven Manor that made her linger after death? His mind spiraled in circles, hunting for answers that didn't exist, until exhaustion finally pulled him under. When he next opened his eyes, the sun was high enough to force a sliver of gold under the edge of the curtains. He'd knocked his cup over, and the dregs of his tea had spilt across the wooden floor, so Daniel rose to find a towel. "I'm staying, aren't I?" He mopped up the spilt liquid, then crossed to the sink and rinsed the cloth. As long as he stayed in the groundskeeper's cottage, he would be in close proximity to a ghost. He searched his soul for negative emotions like disgust or fear, but they weren't present. Annalise's spirit didn't seem malevolent. She'd answered his knock on the window, and she'd smiled. She hadn't tried to come inside. He'd been frightened when she chased him through the garden, but that could be explained as a child playing. She was only 12, after all. So I stay. I finish clearing her tomb, then I make the rest of the garden a little more habitable. His mysterious host, Bran, had to know about the ghost. That was why he wanted the mausoleum cleaned, even though the house wasn't occupied. It was for Annalise's sake, to give her some comfort after death. Daniel left the cloth to dry on the sink and opened the cottage's door. He remained alert for any sign of the ghost, but the patch outside his home was clear. Birds bickered. Insects hummed. Annalise had retreated for the day. Does she live in her crypt? That would seem logical, but... Daniel looked towards the tower protruding from Craven Manor. He could barely see its curtains. When he stared hard enough, he began to imagine he saw a face behind the glass, obscured by the shadows. Bran's letter told me to lock my door and close my window at night so that I wouldn't see Annalise. It also forbade me from opening the tower door. Does she stay there during the day? Daniel tilted his head and strained to see through the tower window, but it was too far away to be sure of what lurked behind it. He might have seen a piece of furniture, a shimmer of light on a wall, or even an optical illusion playing across the glass. He turned away and followed the overgrown path through the gardens. Whatever lives there, Annalise or otherwise, Bran doesn't want me to pry. So I won't. I'll keep my head down and do my job. It felt surreal to go back to work after having his worldview shaken, but he knew exercise could help quiet his buzzing mind. Daniel felt a small rush of pride when the tomb came into sight. He'd done a lot to improve it during his 2 days there. The hideous thorny bushes were gone from the entrance, and the vines were charming rather than suffocating. Daniel scoped around the area, pulling out the remaining smaller bushes he hadn't gotten the first day, and assessed what still needed to be done. The tomb's walls could use a scrub, but that would need a bucket and some kind of non-toxic detergent. He would have to request them next time he spoke to Joel, the delivery man. Daniel scanned the area. The tomb would have been a 2-minute walk from the house under normal circumstances, but with the garden overgrown as badly as it was, the trip easily took 10. I'm supposed to fix the garden as much as I can. Why not work outwards from the crypt? I can clear pathways to both the house and my cottage, and tame the surrounding areas in stages. Daniel retrieved the shovel and began plotting out sections of ground to clear. The path wouldn't be straight, because in some areas the vegetation grew so thick that it would have taken weeks to remove it. Traces of original pathways and design elements were still visible amongst the plants. Daniel plotted a route that took advantage of them. He used the shovel to excise leaf litter and smaller plants out of his chosen trail. Most came out easily and were heaped in piles to be carted away with the wheelbarrow, but some of the weeds stuck so badly that he needed to dig them out. "Come on, stupid thing!" Daniel grunted as he alternately pulled on and hacked at the roots of a particularly stubborn plant. Its leaves tore off in shreds, but its root system was tougher than he'd expected. Daniel was no stranger to hard work, but his muscles were starting to tire. He heaved back, and the plant exploded out of the ground and showered dirt across the scene like confetti. Daniel, laughing, used the back of his gloved hand to clear specks off his face. He threw the plant aside and went back to check that no bulbs remained. Something off-white protruded from the hole. Daniel frowned at it as he tugged broken roots out of the loamy earth. It was a strange shape, but deep enough underground that he could cover it up again. A rock? Just to make sure, he wrapped his knuckles on the shape and recoiled. It felt wrong. Whatever he'd touched wasn't stone. It had felt hollow. Daniel dropped the roots and began scooping the dirt away from the object. The ground wasn't as compacted in that part of the garden as he'd found in other areas, which meant it hadn't been part of the original path. He kept digging, slowly unearthing more of the shape. It was vaguely round and about the size of a soccer ball. Fissures ran across it. The off-white shade had been stained by the earth, and as Daniel dug deeper, he found a hole in its side. His hands had turned numb, but he didn't stop scraping the soil away from the object. He gripped its top and gave it a tug, and a human skull emerged from the ground. Chapter 11. Daniel held up the skull as waves of nausea rose through his stomach. Its jaw had fallen off and remained buried in the loamy earth, leaving just the cranium's empty eyes and its row of upper teeth to leer at Daniel. He dropped the skull. Its cracks widened as the bone thudded into the earth. Is it Annalise's skull? Is this the reason her spirit isn't at rest? He turned to where the weeds blocked his view of the mausoleum. That makes no sense. Why did Bran want me to tend to the crypt if there's no body inside? Sweat coated Daniel. He used his forearm to wipe it off his face. The skull was too large to belong to a child. It was nearly as big as Daniel's head. This came from an adult, then. Someone who died on the property. His breathing was rougher than the exertion warranted, and every nerve in his body screamed to move away from the bones, but Daniel repressed his instincts as he bent over the hole. Part of the lower jaw protruded from the dirt. It was no more than a foot deep, which meant the grave, if it had been a grave, was shallow. He thought it was possible the body had been left on top of the ground and had, over the last 200 years, gradually sunk into the earth or been covered by sediment during heavy rains. He looked behind himself. White bone crested out of the earth in multiple places. Weeds had grown around it and hidden it well, but he recognized a knee and part of a rib. He stood and shifted his weight from foot to foot in an effort to relieve some of his tension. His gloves had protected his fingers from actually touching the bone, but he still rubbed them together, as though there were traces of death that needed to be removed. Calm down and think it through. There was already a crypt on the property. Maybe it was surrounded by a forgotten graveyard, and he'd simply stumbled on one of the bodies buried there. He rotated as he placed his location. He was still close to the wall, no more than 40 meters from the crypt. It would be a logical place to have a cemetery. Families buried people on their property all the time back then. This isn't anything unordinary. Except it was. Even accounting for 2 centuries of erosion, the grave was shallow. There was no tombstone in sight, not even a marker, and no sign of other graves. Paranoia spread through Daniel's veins like liquid fire. He tore off the gloves and began pacing. This was a secret grave. I'm sure whoever buried this body didn't want it found again. What could that mean? Murder? Damn it. His tongue was dry. The house loomed over the trees, and the late afternoon sun made its shadow extend just shy of where Daniel stood. In another half hour, it would swallow him. Do I need to call the police? The letter said not to allow strangers onto the property, but if there's a murder involved, I have to tell someone, don't I? He tried to picture what that would lead to. Would they dig through the garden, searching for more bones? What if they found them? What if the ground underneath Daniel's feet was littered with long-rotted corpses? Calm down. He leaned his back against a tree trunk and rubbed his palms over his closed eyes. Slow breaths didn't do much to calm his racing heart, but they did help clear his head. Think it through, Daniel, and don't do anything hasty. This isn't some recent death where a killer needs to be apprehended and grieving families are seeking peace. The bones had been buried for more than 200 years. They were too fragile to be any more recent than that, which shifted the scene from an unsolved crime to something like archaeology. From where he stood, he could see the skull's cap. The smudged dirt and dark fissures were clearly visible. It will still need to be reported, even if no action is taken. There might still be a great-grandchild out there who wishes they knew what happened to their ancestor, and it deserves a proper burial. The only question is, should I leave a note for Bran and wait on his advice, or go to the police directly? His attention drifted from Craven's slate roof to its tower, and his composure crumbled. A face glared down at him through the blurred glass. With no light inside the room, barely any features were visible, except for a pale face and a long-fingered hand pressed to the window. Daniel's blood turned cold, and the fading sunlight wasn't enough to warm him. The figure was only visible for a second, but then it turned and faded into the room. It couldn't have been Annalise's ghost. The previous night, she'd been close to invisible, almost like a wisp of evaporating fog. But the shape in the tower looked solid. Does someone really live here after all? It was nearly impossible to believe. The dust had been too thick and the lightless hallways too dark. But what other explanation was there? He gave the bones a final lingering stare, then pushed away from the trunk and marched towards the house. The crows had settled around the entrance again. There were more of them. Fresh visitors clung to the stone ledges and the nearby trees. Their attention felt heavy, as though the dozens of eyes trained on him carried weight. Daniel kept his head down as he jogged up the stone steps and entered the foyer. He looked for signs that someone had disturbed the space, but couldn't find any. The crumbling chairs were still covered in grime. There were no new paths in the slowly decaying leaves scattered across the floor. Flecks of dust floated in the air, but not enough to suggest someone had passed through recently. "It seems impossible, but I know I'm not alone." Daniel lifted his chin. "Bran? I want to talk!" His voice reverberated through the manor's countless empty chambers. Daniel let the words hang in the air for a moment, then he called again. "I found the bones in the garden. If you can't explain them, I'll need to report them to the police." His only answer came from muffled echoes. He shuffled his feet. Nerves and wavering conviction made his voice crack. "Bran, or whoever lives here, I'm grateful for the job, but I can't ignore a skeleton. I either need to hear something from you, or I'll have to call in outsiders." He waited in the foyer until he began to feel foolish. Noises floated to him, the sound of creaking wood, the hollow whistle of wind forcing its way between gaps in the stones, and beneath it all was a sound so subtle that he couldn't separate it from his imagination. Fingernails scratching on wood. But no footsteps, and no words. "He's not going to answer." Daniel scuffed his shoe across the marble, disturbing dead leaves in its path, then backed towards the door. Something crumpled under his shoe. It didn't have the normal brittleness of the dead leaves, and Daniel lifted his foot. He'd stepped on a white envelope that had been left on the entryway's top step, the place he'd walked over just minutes before. Daniel picked it up and looked about himself. He searched for movement among the gardens, but the only disturbance came from the murder of crows lurking above him. He flipped up the envelope's flap and pulled out the paper. "Bury the bones, please. I cannot stand to look at them. You seek answers. Join me for supper in the dining room at 7 tonight. Bran." Daniel returned the note to the envelope as he shuffled down the stairs. A sense of dread had returned, and it made his eyes water and the hairs across his arms prickle. This proves it. As improbable as it seems, I'm not alone at Craven Manor. He's been watching me. Through the windows? Among the trees? There's no way to know. But he was here, meters away from me, and I didn't hear or see him. It's unnatural.
He tucked the letter into his pocket and increased his pace as he lurched into the gardens. Bran wanted him to bury the bones. That felt wrong, but Daniel had to remind himself that the bones were old. Reburying them wouldn't make him an accomplice or a criminal. And if Bran's answers didn't satisfy him, the remains could always be uninterred. The unmarked grave wasn't difficult to find. Daniel had left debris scattered around the scene. The weed he'd pulled out hung to one side, its roots slowly drying in the sun. His gloves lay on the ground, and the hole was dark and raw, like a still bleeding wound in the ground. The white bones stood out in stark contrast against the loamy earth. The grave wasn't deep. Only a few inches of earth covered the bones. Daniel raised a shovelful of soil to pour over the bare skull, but unease stilled his hand. He hated the idea of leaving the skeleton exposed. He could heap dirt over the bones, but it would only wash away. Whoever this person had been in life, they deserved a proper grave. He scooped out a clear patch of ground near the skull and began digging a new hole. Block after block of ground came out under the pressure of his shovel. The first foot was easy, but after that, Daniel began to encounter stones. They slowed his progress, but didn't stop it. Without help, he couldn't dig far enough to create a genuine 6-foot hole, but he got it to at least 4 feet. It wasn't wide, but the bones didn't have any flesh clinging to them that would require more space. From freelance janitor to groundskeeper, and now undertaker, you're really moving up in the world, Daniel. He wiped the back of his hand across his forehead as he considered the logistics of moving the bones. If the skull was anything to go by, the rest of the skeleton would be too fragile to remove in little pieces. It would be easier to shift it over in blocks. He noted the space the bones protruded from, then traced the area where he thought the body might be resting. Weedy grass grew over it, and he cleared the plants away before beginning his dig. The first thing he found was a rib bone. He adjusted his angle and kept digging past it until he also found a hip bone, then a shin. Finally, when he was certain his marks encircled the entire body, he dug down and levered the bones out in square-foot-sized chunks. Just like a jigsaw puzzle. He lowered 3 ribs and an upper arm bone into the new grave. Keep the pieces in order. Don't let them get scrambled. It took more than an hour to transfer the whole skeleton, moving as carefully as he could to make sure he hadn't left any parts behind. By the time he began filling the new hole, the sun was setting. All right. I either did a really good job giving a body a dignified burial, or disturbed a century-old crime scene. A hysterical giggle escaped him as he tamped down the earth. The sense of dread refused to abate. His instinct was to trust Bran. Except for some bizarre requests and odd behaviors, the man hadn't caused him any harm. But it was impossible to stop doubt from creeping in. He didn't have a tombstone, but a few minutes of searching found a long dead branch that was shaped like a very wonky cross. Daniel snapped it off its tree and thrust it into the earth at the grave's head. It was still a far cry from the crypt's elegant dignity, but it was better than nothing. Crows cawed in the distance as they settled around Craven Manor for the night. Daniel jogged to his cottage and let himself inside. The clock above his fireplace said it was already after 7, so he hurried to wash as well as he could in the sink and change into fresh clothes before making the return trip back to the dark mansion. Its front door hung open, and Daniel entered under the watchful eyes of a multitude of somber birds. The space was just as empty and desolate as it had been earlier. Daniel ran his hands through his hair, trying to make sure he looked at least a little presentable, then approached the fireplace.
He stopped by the ancient furniture and waited for his host to appear. Instead, a door farther into the foyer drew open with a slow, prolonged creak. Daniel didn't move for several moments. Light came through the doorway to illuminate the cobwebs clustered around its frame. They looked almost like a halo, both delicate and threatening.
"Move. Don't keep him waiting."
Daniel forced his feet to work. They carried him as far as the tile before the doorway, then stopped. A sense of unreality washed through him. The dining room was lit with lamps spaced along the walls and on candelabras in the center of the table. A crackling fireplace dominated the room's closest wall. Three large wing-back chairs were spaced around it, and the bright flames sent twisting shadows rollicking up the wood panel walls. The massive table stretched the length of the room. Daniel imagined at least 40 guests could sit around it without bumping elbows. Heavy dust coated the surface. Only one place had been set, the seat at the head of the table, closest to the fireplace. A bowl was filled with steaming soup, and a plate beside it held a bread roll and butter.
"Is this what he meant by dinner? I'd assumed we'd be eating together."
Daniel snuck a look behind himself, but the foyer remained deserted.
"Bran? Sir?"
Did I arrive too late? Did he give up and leave?
Curiosity pulled Daniel towards the table. The bowl was clean and modern. The soup looked like some kind of minestrone, but they'd been placed on top of the powdery dust thick enough to obscure the wood's color. The door slammed closed. Daniel flinched and swiveled towards it, but no one had followed him into the room. A voice rasped from one of the wing-back chairs by the fireplace.
"Sit."
Chapter 12. Daniel did as he was told, fumbling to pull the chair out from the head of the table and slip into it. The voice was unlike anything he'd ever heard. It was cracked and dry, as though it had been stolen from a man on his deathbed. But at the same time, there was enormous force inside the word, the kind that told Daniel it would be dangerous to cross its instructions.
"Enjoy your dinner, Mr. Kane."
The words made Daniel shudder. He clenched his hands in his lap and hazarded a glance around the back of his chair.
"Will you be joining me?"
"Not tonight. I do not have much of an appetite."
The voice came from the central fireplace chair. Its high back and flared sides perfectly hid the occupant. He and Daniel sat back to back, less than 5 feet apart, but blind to each other. The idea of creeping around the chair's side to see his mysterious host's face flittered through Daniel's mind, but he didn't dare follow through. The voice didn't invite games. The spoon and butter knife had been laid on top of a clean napkin to keep them off the dust, but Daniel still had to hide a grimace as he picked them up. He dipped the spoon into the soup and gave it an experimental stir, but didn't drink any.
"You're Bran, aren't you?"
"Correct."
The chair's leather creaked as the man shifted. Daniel had been developing the idea since he'd entered the room that he might be talking to a ghost, but the noise killed that theory. Ghosts, at least the kind of ghost Daniel had heard about, didn't have any weight to exert on their surroundings.
"You have questions,"
Bran said.
"Ask."
Daniel's spoon looped around the bowl again. His mind was churning with requests and doubts, and his tongue felt rubbery as he tried to phrase them.
"Those bones, do you know who they belonged to?"
"Yes. You found Eliza Myricks. She was Annalise's mother."
Daniel drew a sharp breath. He looked behind himself again, hungry to catch a glimpse of Bran, but his companion remained hidden.
He caught himself. Would it be rude to repeat what the bartender said?
Will he think I've been gossiping about the house?
Continue.
The cracked, guttural voice was curt, but not hostile. Daniel licked dry lips. I heard she was paranoid, bordering on insane. A strange, hacking, gasping sound came from the chair. It sounded like choking, and Daniel dropped his spoon as he prepared to stand. Then he realized what the sound was. Bran was laughing.
That is correct.
A bleak mirth infused the words and gave them life, but not in a way that warmed Daniel.
She was a cruel, changeable woman. Young Annalise bore the brunt of her erraticism, and it ultimately killed the child.
Daniel frowned at his soup. Her grave was shallow, and it didn't have any headstone.
Yes, she was interred by her sole surviving relative, her son. He was not strong enough to bury her deep, but left the grave unmarked deliberately. He did not believe she had earned a Christian burial. I agreed with him enough to leave her body undisturbed.
Oh. Daniel felt a twinge of discomfort and lifted a spoonful of the soup to distract himself. I shouldn't have dug her up. I didn't know she was there, and I was trying to clear a path.
That is forgivable. As was your trespassing beyond your curfew last night.
The tone wasn't harsh, but it held an undercurrent of resignation that made Daniel cringe. Sorry. It won't happen again.
As I said, forgivable.
Desperate to shift the discussion back to safer ground, Daniel cleared his throat. The soup is delicious. Thank you.
I had the store owner prepare it.
Bran exhaled as he shifted restlessly.
Do not be reticent about your requests if you require improvements to your living arrangements. I am not concerned about the finances.
Oh, right, thank you. You've been really generous. When Bran didn't respond, Daniel brought another spoonful of the soup up to his lips. His mind was cluttered with questions, but he felt too unsafe to be pushy about them. He tried one of the less antagonistic angles. Craven Manor is a beautiful building. Did you inherit or buy it?
I inherited. My surname is Myricks.
So he's related to Annalise. That could explain the interest in helping her ghost. I thought this place was empty when I first arrived. Have you lived here for long?
Some time, yes, though I do not spend all of my hours in the house.
Bran's shoes scraped across the rug as he adjusted his position again. Daniel suspected something was causing him discomfort, possibly arthritis or a kind of chronic pain. He had one more pressing question, but struggled to find an easy way to bring it up. He broke the bread roll in half and painted it with butter as he gathered his thoughts. I'm guessing Annalise is the reason you wanted me to lock my door and shut the window after midnight. You didn't want me to know the manor is, there was no tactful way to say it. Haunted.
Ha!
Again, the raspy, grating laugh put Daniel's nerves on edge.
You are correct. Annalise can become curious. Though you seem to have accepted her presence with considerable grace.
Daniel managed an awkward shrug, even though he knew Bran wouldn't see it. I've always been open to the idea of ghosts. I've never seen one before, though. He tore pieces off the roll. Is there anything I should, or could, be doing to help her?
Her state is intractable. There is no help to offer, save for preserving the places she is fond of. Her crypt. Her gardens.
Bran paused, and again the leather seat creaked.
You are aware of her condition?
The sun allergy? Yeah.
During life, She was unable to leave the house during the day, but thrived under the moonlight. From what I understand, the gardens were her sanctuary. While inside the house, she was smothered by her mother's will.